These last weeks during Lent, we've been walking with Jesus here, there, and everywhere. We've walked with him through the desert as he faces off Satan, no big deal. We've walked with him in the veil of night to Nicodemus's house. We've walked with him to his best friend's funeral. We've walked with him to the pool of Siloam, where the physical blindness of one man exposes the spiritual blindness of an entire community. And at each turn, we've asked ourselves what Jesus might be beckoning us towards and challenging us to resist. Today, we find Jesus alone, well, not exactly alone, at a well with a woman, right outside the walls of a city that someone like him would never set foot in. And as we've pressed ourselves these last weeks to resist the temptations posed to us in power, in privilege, in despair, in theological absolutes, this week's text invites us to ask who we will love, who we will touch, who we will imagine as friend and neighbor and lover and sojourner. Some of you might have noticed that this morning's story has several parenthetical statements scattered throughout it, at least in the English version. The one in verse 9 is particularly striking to me. Set aside as a little aside for the reader, that's us, it stands as this morsel of information, this helpful FYI, journeying from the mind of the storyteller all the way to you, the reader. Of course, an ancient manuscript of John's Gospel, a piece of papyrus covered in Greek letters with no punctuation at all, have fun reading that, wouldn't have had any parentheses in it. We use them now as a kind of grammatical construct to indicate something like this. While this sentence isn't essential to the story, it is helpful information for you, reader, to tuck it away in case you need it later. So there it is, this bracketed symbol in verse 9. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask a drink of me, a woman of Samaria?" Open parentheses. Jews do not share things in common with Samaritans. Close parentheses. Jews do not share things in common with Samaritans. Jews do not share things in common with Samaritans. Got it? I suppose that is helpful to know as we watch Jesus, a red-blooded Jew, walk up to a woman, a blue-collared Samaritan, and ask her for a slug of water. By the way, parentheses, in case you didn't know, one more time, Jews do not share things in common with Samaritans. Well, we could have a long history lesson replete with maps and tables outlining dynasties, kingships, and ancestries that would enlighten this little parenthesis a bit, but I thought you might get angry with me. So let's just say, for our purposes this morning, that for a solid few hundred years, the people group who called themselves Samaritans and the people group who called themselves Jews did not and had not shared things in common. Things like schools, places of worship, markets, street corners, resources, water fountains, or more contextually put, water wells. Thanks, Elijah. Appreciate that from the back. Marriages. children. You get the idea. Because, of course, as we all know, in case I haven't said this 50 times, Jews and Samaritans do not share things in common. Except when they do. Except when in one still, small, intimate, nearly unseen moment, Jesus, a Jew, shares touch and water and conversation and something in common with a Samaritan. So many things that we treat as facts aren't really facts at all, are they? Those people don't do things like we do things, or they are in our way, or we cannot acquire the land and wealth and security that we need if we worry about them too much. Or we're just too different to have much of anything to talk about. But these beliefs that produce exclusivism like this, they're beliefs, not facts. They're just a bunch of relational roadblocks, social constructs, isms that rule and ruin our lives and our relationships, even if we think that somehow they are true, even if we think that somehow they protect us, set boundaries, and keep the gravitational equations of our social realities balanced. I can't help but think that the ancient writer of John's Gospel is being a bit tongue-in-cheek with us while tossing this little parenthesis into the story. Like the writer is setting us up for this big whammy moment. So as ancient readers hear this, they say to themselves, yeah, thanks, writer of John, but everybody already kind of knows that. Jews and Samaritans do not share things in common. Whoop-de-doo. And as they play out, the history and bloodshed and violence that makes that statement seem so obviously true, here comes Jesus. Just totally mucking up their obvious train of thought. As he walks by a woman he has been bred to hate. And asks her to help him. Jesus just saunters right into this parenthesis and says, nah. And so Jesus and a woman from the other side of town share their hearts in the middle of the day, in broad daylight. And together the two of them turn what everyone thought was a fact into an opinion and a misinformed one at that. See, Jews and Samaritans actually shared quite a lot in common. Bloodline, ancestry, land, and actually God. I know I didn't pull out all the maps and dynasties because I thought you'd get mad with me, but as it turns out, Samaritans and Jews are old relatives. Before all the empires started taking them over, and affecting their identities. The reality is these two people groups were angry with each other because in their heart of hearts, they knew they were never supposed to be separated in the first place. They were always long-lost brothers, sisters, lovers, and friends, too afraid to admit they weren't really all that different from each other at all. There are moments when we find ourselves listening to or befriending or lost in the embrace of people we've been told we don't share things in common with. There are times we find ourselves falling head over heels for people we've been constructed and advised to exclude from our circles. Sometimes this is the result of our privilege, like we talked about in week two. Sometimes this is a result of our theological blindness, like we talked about, I think, in week four, something like that. Sometimes it's because nobody's ever given us the freedom to reimagine the wild capacity we have for intimacy and relationship across lines of difference. And Jesus is all about saving us from that mess. Jews and Samaritans do not share things in common. Who says? The clean, the unclean, the sick, the weak, the invalid must not associate with the clean, the well, the strong. Who says? Women and children have no place among those with power and prestige and privilege, i.e. men. Who says? The wealthy and the poor are better served in different neighborhoods, different schools, different grocery stores, and different tax brackets. Who says? Black men and white women are not to marry each other and bear children. Who says? Two women cannot fall in love and build a life together. Who says? It's not possible for Palestinians and Israelis to live together peaceably in Gaza. Who says? Immigrants, if they choose to be in this country, must accept whatever treatment and whatever pay they receive. Who says? With an increasing population, there simply are not enough resources to feed the world. Who says? Who is saying these things? Who is building ideologies and walls and borders and systems that tell us these things? Who is telling us that Jews and Samaritans do not share things in common, that we are all better off excluding certain people from our living and our loving? Well, I hate to tell you this, but you do. I do. We do. Every day. Every day when we choose to let some readers aside, some set of facts that we haven't tested or challenged, some sentence in a parenthesis, rule our lives. But I can't help but wonder, if we truly desired one another, loved one another, refused to fear one another, would we still say these things? Would we still believe these things? It's worth noting that Jesus and the Samaritan woman find themselves alone in the middle of the day, on the outskirts of town, by a well. In an ancient Near Eastern context like theirs, hearing a story about a man and a woman meeting alone at a well would have set off all the once upon a time love story bells. You see, Jacob met Rachel at a well. Moses met Zipporah at a well. Many of the great lovers in the Hebrew scriptures met each other at a well. The well, then, is a symbol of intimacy, of possibility, of relational imagination, of thirst quenching when we least expect it and with whom we least expect it. Sure does make me wonder how the current vice president, who says he cannot have a meal alone with a woman for fear of impropriety, reads this story in John's gospel about a Jesus who crosses gender barriers, ethnic barriers, religious barriers, class barriers, social barriers, constructed, useless, baseless, dangerous, dehumanizing barriers, and offers intimate conversation and living water. Sure does make me wonder how the current president can quote 2 Corinthians. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And find himself in the business of wall building and Muslim banning. Because best I can tell, both the body and spirit of the Lord keep putting people at tables together who've been told they shouldn't be at those tables together. Slave and free, Jew and Gentile, male and female. Best I can tell, the body and spirit of the Lord falls upon the early church, and they speak not in their own tongue, but the myriad languages of those gathered around them. Best I can tell, when we refuse relationship across lines of equity and mutuality, we blaspheme the living God, the God of living water. And we dam up those living waters, waiting to quench our thirst, to bring life to the wilderness, to sustain us and free us for intimacy and friendship. Jews do not share things in common with Samaritans. Who says?